Menards Black Friday sale is here. Get everything you need to bring home the holidays. A Nerf Blaster dog toy blasts tennis balls 75 feet. Fun for you and your pup. Just $15.99. Delicious Dubai chocolate is $12.99 a bag. Color-changing squish lamps and Performax drill bit sets are only $4.99 each. Menards has great Black Friday gifts for everyone in your family. Hurry in while supplies last. Good through November 30th. See Menards.com for details.
It's time for the Del Olalea Show
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Now, broadcasting live from the Huntington Bank Studios, here's Del Olalea.
When the world was a time of this and that, I was young, didn't know to hold it back. Now we're here in the world, something else. We can leave any day and call for help. We were gods, nobody was above me. The A on my chest like a Dolce. The A on my chest, put your fist up. The A on my chest like a chipmunk. Alvin, Theodore, breathe in, breathe out. Never mind, it was time, number nine, let my lies, feline, with a death wish. Be right, didn't help. No name on a guest list. Hold on, we're destined.
So this is my last show before a vacation. I don't know if we will match the nonsense from 7 to 10. Just doesn't feel like what's going to happen. We'll do our thing, though. Since we won't be here the next couple days, we will talk some television. Happy Stranger Things Day to those who celebrate, if you want to do that. I got a flight to catch, so I will touch down in Orlando local time about 10 o'clock. I didn't get my season 4 rewatch in, so I think I will do that. And it's odd. I don't know if I can tell people, sorry, I'm not available for Thanksgiving because I'm going to watch season 4 of Stranger Things. Get back to me in a little bit because they're long episodes. So I'll do some of that. Of course, do the family stuff. And maybe by like Monday of next week, I'll be ready to watch the first part of the final season. AJ's here with me. No Sean. Sean decided, and probably smartly, what's the point of being here on a Wednesday? We were trying to figure out some scheduling stuff because initially Raheel was going to do today, and then something popped up where he might not have been able to. And then we were trying to figure out, can AJ come in early? Are you going to just do the show? Joe and I were talking about, am I just going to do the show with John? And then I said, what about AJ? He goes, well, AJ can't. He's got a haircut scheduled. And I thought, and I didn't think anything of it. I was like, well, yeah. Busy and booked, I'm sure his barber is, so he's got to get it in at when he can. The haircut needs to be done. Is that because you are seeing the family? Is this a tradition where you get the haircut because you're going to be out and about over the holidays?
Usually that, and then I scheduled it around like when the schedule came out. So like,
yeah, if you thought you would have been available, of course. Mm-hmm. So it's two Americas. I imagine Joe and others, wherever they get their haircuts, think to themselves, I could just move this around. It's two Americas. So
right.
AJ's hair guy can't just move stuff around. So AJ's here with the fresh cut as the holidays are approaching. So we will get into what will be a busy night in the NBA because the Rockets are playing. The NBA ceded Thanksgiving a long time ago to the NFL. The NFL decided you could have Christmas for a little bit until we found our way to it, and now we're going to take that over. The NBA has not decided to take over Thanksgiving. So we got a lot of games tonight. The Rockets are in San Francisco to play the Golden State Warriors. No Kevin Durant. It's the second game of his time away from the team, but the rest of the squad will be there outside of Tar Eason as they try to beat the Warriors. The Warriors just a game over 500. We know the Rockets coming off a win in Phoenix, so we'll get into that a little bit. Of course, we're awaiting word that Jalen Petrie and C.J. Stroud are out of concussion protocol. Aaron Wilson says they're expected to practice today. I think it's just a formality. They just haven't been able to really practice since Thursday night when they beat the Bills. So until you get that practice in and get through the steps, they remain in concussion protocol. D'Amico Ryans told us that on Monday. So if it looks all good for CJ and Jalen Petrie, and the offense is going to need it because D'Amico even said on Monday, they got to be better. They were bad in the second half against the Bills. So if we get word that he's out of protocol, if D'Amico meets the media before they take the practice field today, we will certainly let you know. But let's get into what's happening tomorrow. So AJ's already got us cut. Are you part of one of those families who tours the city, makes stops everywhere? Because I have been part of that family, and I've also been the place where people stop.
Usually the place where people stop. We go to my grandparents. So.
Okay.
Yeah.
I remember one time a family friend brought like her grandkids over, and they were just miserable because they had to go around the entire city making stops with family, friends of the family, and at some point the kids are just enough.
They can be exhausted.
Yeah. So if you are one of those people who has to travel the city because you got to make stops, hopefully you know what's in the kitchen. You know who makes the good stuff, so you can pick and choose what you eat and where you eat it. That's the plan. Like, if you know the mac and cheese is great here, you hold off on eating the mac and cheese someplace else because you know you got a plate coming that's going to top what you may be being served. I've had to talk before. Last Thanksgiving, it was Christmas time. It was maybe two Christmases ago. I got hit with the sweet potato souffle. Nope.
It
was a thing, and it shouldn't have been. It tasted somewhat, but the texture wasn't right. You know, we've had to talk. I'm a yams guy. But even the sweet potato casserole, this was sweet potato souffle. Never again. If I see that, I'll just hold off and wait to the next place because it'll kind of ruin my Christmas Day dinner. So you got to make a plan. And if you are someone who's either hosting or making the trip, this already should have been figured out kind of days ago. You don't want to be making decisions on the move because you could get stuck. I will be on a flight tonight. So, I will be out of contact with anyone, which is the perfect thing. Let's leave me alone. I'm on a plane. Leave me alone. And then I'll get in and I'll reconnect, right around 10 o'clock as I go visit my mom in Orlando. So, Thanksgiving's here. Appreciate you if you're listening. Of course, you can call in 713-780-3776 as it'll be AJ and me till noon. And then and then Rich Eisen or whoever's replacing him today, if that's the case. And then I think Jeremy and Joe, or is it Joe and someone else today?
No, it's going to Nashville.
Oh, they're just done.
Yeah.
Man, we should have done that too. I should have done that too. But what I didn't know Lance was going to be here, but I knew John was going to be here. So I just decided. And besides, I got the next 2 days and then the week after, but I still should have took that Wednesday off or this Wednesday as well. So we'll get into the college football weekend as well, because there's a lot of back and forth, mostly because we're Hills and Longhorn and we are the Aggie station. Is Longhorns and Aggies. The question was asked, is this the biggest game in Aggie history? They have won conference titles before. I'm not in the modern era. Relatively modern era. I'm not going to go push back to 1939. Because that was right before World War II. I mean, I'm not, it happened. Those championships happened, but I don't have to acknowledge them. The biggest moment, other than the Johnny Manziel 2-year run and that Cotton Bowl win, I think you beat up on Oklahoma in the Cotton Bowl back when they were still in the Big 12, was Sir Parker and the Big 12 title game. So, if they can pull this off, beating the Horns on the way to an SEC title game, every game gets bigger, of course. Right now, the game today, I think you could say maybe their biggest game since 1998. I mean, the game tomorrow or Friday. Friday, right. Their biggest game since 1998. And then the next game will be bigger because it's the SEC title game. And then the first playoff game and so on and so forth. That's the type of year they're having. Credit to Mike Elko. And that's the kind of the, I won't say a wasteland, but that's kind of how barren it's been for the Aggies in terms of being in the national conversation. So we don't need to have a real conversation about if it's the biggest game, because there'll just be another one if they continue to win. So we'll see how that goes. Longhorns, Aggies. The Longhorns have an outside shot. We'll talk about the CFP when we come back because the rankings are out. There wasn't much movement from them, or really at all, as far as teams who are fighting for a playoff spot. But we'll get into the rankings. Hunter Yurecek did something very awkward with his 6'7 joke when asked about Lane Kiffin and the Ole Miss situation. Ole Miss dropped the spot from 6 to 7, which led to a joke from a man who should know better. No one who was already upset about the fact that USC and Seton Hall pushed the CFP show back almost an hour was looking for him to make jokes. I don't know if it was the plan, because, of course, when you have these holiday tournaments, the schedule says one thing, but if a game goes late that pushes back another game, then you're at the mercy of the game, and that's what happened. The college football playoff ranking show was supposed to start at 6 yesterday. It did not start to like 6:50 because Seton Hall and USC had to finish their tight one. Thankfully, for most people, it didn't go to overtime, because that would have upset plenty of college football fans. It was a good basketball game, but no one was looking for Seton Hall versus USC with Eric Musselman taking pictures with co-eds at the end of the game. That's what it looked like. I'm not sure if they were co-eds, but they were women wearing USC stuff who looked of college age. All right. We'll get into the CFP rankings. Eric, I see you. You want to call in and talk. We'll get to you. Anyone else, 713-780-3776. And we will talk about the Cougs, because they played in a tournament, the Players Era Tournament, lost to Tennessee in a way that the Cougs kind of always lose games. They go cold for long stretches, and that's their kryptonite. It appears no matter how talented the team is, no matter who is a maybe – one-and-done guy, there will be moments in games, whether they be a Tennessee team who people were questioning because of their lack of competition coming in, or, as we know, the final, national final, where a stretch happens where the Cougs go from looking to be in a pretty good spot to one where all of a sudden they're down by multiple possessions like they were last night, and they could not pull out the game. Happened the game before as well. So if only that could get fixed. And they may be a perfect team. Now, that's something to certainly for Kelvin Sampson to build on. We'll hear from him. And he also gave a quote about why they were even in the tournament. It's pretty succinct, pretty dead on. And it's about the business of college sports. We'll do that and a lot more. We're just going to start here. Me and AJ till noon. We'll be back.
This is the Del Olalea Show
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Live from the Huntington Bank Studios, here's Del Olalea.
All right, we'll get to the CFP talk here shortly with the new rankings coming out. And we'll get into some of the games that can affect what we see next Tuesday as we head to Championship Week. But let's get to Eric. Eric forgot to ask me a question. Eric called into the morning show and started a rumor that not only am I going on vacation, but I'm taking a job in Miami. So that's a lie. The second part of it, at least. But now he wants to ask me a question. What's up, Eric?
Hey, Bill. Pretty Pete's going to win the National Dog Show tomorrow. I know last year, Vito the Pug won. But who do you think is going to win tomorrow? I know the couple of dogs working at tight ends back in the day. You remember that.
I don't.
Also, for the guys that are on Ozempic and Wegovy, like Lance and John, what do you think you should eat first for Thanksgiving? Turkey and stuffing, or go through the side dishes? And one more thing, I do wish you the best in your new job in Florida. It was a great run here, and it's all over social media. I mean,
it's not.
I don't know what to say, but we're going to miss you, buddy. Good luck. I'll talk to you later.
Wow. Just a pack of lies from start to finish. John, I do not believe is on Ozempic, and I'm not sure how Ozempic changes which dish you go with first on Thanksgiving. Lance is in the middle of losing weight. He's walking, eating his factor meals. I'm not sure if he's being helped out by something. That's a question you can ask him when he's back. I am someone who doesn't make a choice. You make a plate. What do you mean what you go with first? You throw it all on there. And maybe you take a bite of each. It's pretty simple for me. The baked chicken will go on a plate. If there's ham there, sure. The fixings you want, mac and cheese, yams, whatever it is. And maybe the first bite is a combo of all three. And you know, that's the first plate. Depending on how much you load up the plate, maybe you go back for seconds in an hour or 2 hours. But Look, I will try everything the first time because someone I know and I love cooked it. So you show them that you're eating everything they prepared for the most part. If it's stuffing, I'm out. I don't care for it. But after that, then you go with your favorites. Like at points for the next 4 days, it's just meals filled full of a roll, some mac, and the yams. And now you got to ration them because at some point you're going to run out. And you want always to have a combo of mac, at least for me, a plate of mac and yams. I don't want to finish one without the other. That's my plan. It's always a plan. So I don't make a choice. They all wind up on the plate at once, at least the first time around. As far as the dog show, I don't know what you're talking about. I don't know who's a favorite. I don't know who's going to win. Hopefully some beagle wins. I like a beagle. But other than that, I don't know. Thank you, Eric, for your call, I think. All right. What happened last night? As I told you, the CFP show got delayed by almost an hour. But once it got going, there were no real surprises. Like SMU is now a part of the rankings thanks to their run recently of just winning ball games. And really since the Miami win, they have continued to win ball games. Pittsburgh is now in because despite getting thumped by Notre Dame, they did beat Georgia Tech. On Saturday, they had a 28-0 lead and held on to win 42-28. So they're in the midst of the ACC race. They're in the 20s. Arizona State jumped up multiple spots. But as far as the teams who don't need an automatic berth by winning their conference, the at-largest right now, no real changes other than Utah dropping a spot because they gave up 47 points and nearly 450 to 500 yards of rushing yards against K-State in the game they came back and won. Utah did. So they fall below Miami. Utah entered at 11. They entered at 12. They're now 13. Miami's 12. And Alabama remained at 10. Notre Dame remained at 9. Oklahoma State at 8 after their win over Missouri. The one flip in that, if they drop a game, who knows, type of a tier was Ole Miss. They go from 6 to 7. We know the Lane Kiffin thing hangs over their head. And Hunter Yurecek, the new head of the, at least the guy who speaks now that Mac Rhodes had to step down. Hunter Yurecek is now the guy whose face you see talking to Reese Davis and others. He was asked about the Ole Miss situation, and this is what he said.
We're joined by the chair of the College Football Playoff Selection Committee, Hunter Yurecek. Hunter, not a lot of changes. You had to go all the way down to number 15 last week to find a team that lost when SC lost to Oregon. But there was a change at 6-7 with Oregon and Ole Miss swapping spots. How much of an impact potentially could it be on Ole Miss if it's determined they don't have their head coach in the field?
6-7. But seriously, Rich, we didn't have That's any enough. Discussion.
I mean, whatever he said after that, who cares? These are the people we have to listen to. These are the people making decisions. Look, it's all made for show. It's all for TV. Look, it's not that serious, but there are fan bases every week on Tuesday, once this show comes out, trying to figure out what's their path to the playoff. Can we get in? If we do this, another team loses, and this is what we get. You're like, he's like 50 something years old. Cut it out, man. Stop it. It is a harmless thing that Gen Alpha and maybe Gen Z kids are doing. It's not for you. It's not for you, Hunter Yurecek. Just answer the questions, not in any consistent way, because the criteria changes depending on the teams you're comparing and just your opinions. Sometimes it's eye test, sometimes it's metrics. It all depends on what they want to highlight, and that's team for team. But please don't. And people are like, all right, that's enough. Let's ruin and end the committee because of this. It's serious business. It's stupid, the whole show, but it is serious business, and we got this from this guy, and you got the fake media laugh from Reese Davis, which he has to. Otherwise, it gets really awkward. So there it is. Now, inside of that stupid joke was the fact that Ole Miss did drop a spot. They dropped behind Oregon because Oregon beat USC. You heard Reese Davis mention the USC loss. Ole Miss didn't play. They had the bye week. And Oregon was able to jump over them. So Ole Miss is in some danger. I don't know that they're in danger if they beat Miss State and Lane Kiffin goes and takes another job. I don't think they'll treat his absence like they treated Jordan Travis getting hurt for Florida State a couple years ago when it was still a 14 playoff. But getting jumped over means you have less between you and a loss knocking you out of the playoff. I think if Ole Miss loses in a game where Miss State is kind of squirrely at home, we know they pushed Texas to the brink. They beat Arizona State there in Starkville. They lose that game, Ole Miss isn't making the playoff. Now, the question is, if there are multiple SEC teams that are on the bubble that lose, what happens? How does that play out? Do they manufacture a way to get more SEC teams in? Because Oklahoma hosts LSU. I don't know how many points anyone's scoring in that game. If you didn't watch Western Kentucky versus LSU this weekend, good for you. It was ugly. LSU, I don't know if they're holding stuff back. Their defense was great. I mean, they held Western Kentucky to like 3 points. We've seen Oklahoma over the last several weeks. Their offense is not good. Missouri is a good defense, and they held Oklahoma down. Oklahoma made a couple big plays, blocked some field goals, and they got the win 17-6. That game could be 13-10, and I couldn't tell you who would win that game. Then, of course, Alabama's going to Auburn, a place where even the best Alabama teams have had their issues. This isn't a good Auburn team. They're now, I believe, on either their third or fourth quarterback for the year. They have a true freshman who is playing. He got his first start in the previous week, so it'll be his second start. But Jordan Hare is a house of horrors for Alabama. Always, it feels tough, no matter if it's Bryce Young playing, if it's Tua playing. It doesn't matter. Quarterbacks who go in there, not that they don't play well, it's just a team. And this isn't a vintage Alabama team. So we saw them against Oklahoma lose a game to a team they completely outplayed. So that could be in play here because Auburn has a pretty good defense. And, of course, they are trying to ruin Alabama's season. So if Alabama were to lose, of course, they're out of the SEC title picture because Georgia would go. And then they're out of the playoff. So as far as chaos, the SEC, you might consider it the most unlikely because of who has to play who. But if it happens, I am interested to see if all those SEC at-larges lose, how do they treat that conference, and does it open up spots for like a BYU or a Utah? Utah probably more specifically, because if BYU goes and plays the Big 12 title game and gets beat by Texas Tech again, even though BYU beat Utah, and they would have the same amount of losses, would an embarrassing loss by BYU be enough to elevate Utah into a playoff spot? Or would they pick another SEC team? Because we can't allow Utah to take an SEC spot. So that'll be something to look to this weekend. It starts on Friday. Aggies, Horns, Ole Miss, Miss State. And, of course, for the Longhorns, they need a lot of chaos in front of them. They need teams who are currently even out of the playoff picture as far as the bracket is concerned to lose. And then they would need the chaos of the teams inside the playoff picture in the bracket to lose. Like, if you're a Horns fan, job one, beat the Aggies. And then the rest of your weekend, you're just looking for losses from two lost teams and one lost teams. And maybe you find your way in there if all hell breaks loose. But it's going to be tough. Of course, the Aggie thing might be the toughest of it all. Riley asks this: if Texas does what Raheel thinks on Friday, Raheel thinks that the Longhorns are winning by 10 in Austin. Is that enough to get up in front of Utah, assuming Michigan and Vandy both lose as well? Utah doesn't have a lot left. They've got Kansas on the road. They just barely got by K-State. Can a Longhorn win elevate them over Utah? I think how they win is going to be important. Utah, as it stands now, is 13. Would a win over... Normally, you would say a win over a top two, top three team in the country would be enough to elevate you four more spots, particularly when the team who you're trying to jump isn't really playing anyone. I just think that ugly loss of Florida is going to come into play. Utah's losses are to BYU, who's in the top 12, in their case, top 11, and they lost to Tech, I believe. Those, and we've seen the committee this year, they love a good loss. That's why Notre Dame is where they are. And then the eye test, I guess, because Notre Dame is beating up on teams who are running out lacrosse players at quarterback. So that's what happened against Syracuse. So the eye test and good losses have mattered quite a bit. And unfortunately for the Longhorns, they've got a bad loss. It was at the Swamp. It was very early in the year. They're playing better football. But that one might hold some real sway because, as I said, Utah has a loss to Tech, a blowout. They got beat by 24 points. They also have a three-point loss at BYU in Provo. So we're talking about two top 11 teams as their losses. That might mean more than beating A&M with a Florida loss on it. And then you get blown out by Georgia as well. So I think the road is tough for the Horns. Maybe a blowout of A&M changes some people's minds, and then maybe you elevate as long as you get help. All right, we'll go to break with that. If you want to join us, 713-780-3776. We heard from Hunter Yurecek. We'll hear from someone a little bit more responsible, a little bit more aware of the moment. We'll hear from Kelvin Sampson when we come back. The Cougs lose a tough one to Tennessee in the Players Era tournament. Kelvin Sampson also told us why the Cougs were even in the tournament. And once you hear it, it's pretty obvious. So we'll get to that when we come back.
You're listening to the Del Olalea Show
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Live from the Huntington Bank Studios, here's Del Olalea.
Salsa, you were there, now you're not. If you want to get back in, you're welcome to 713-780-3776. All right, the Cougs lose a tough one last night, went on what you can now say customary drought offensively. I was watching that game along with the Seton Hall USC game, and every time I would switch back, oh, they're still at 48 points. Or was it 46? Was it 46? I forgot what number they got stuck on as Tennessee started to build some momentum. But it's just got to be painful. You know that team's really good as far as the Cougs are concerned. If they could just find a way to stem the tide at points, just put a couple buckets together, get to the line, knock down some free throws. You would if you knew they had that answer when these things were happening, you feel pretty good about them. It's just when they get in those droughts, and credit to their defense, because if they didn't play defense as good as they do, then instead of being down by five, they'd be down by 10, considering how long they go without scoring points. AJ, were you able to see the game?
Only some of it, not a lot, though. But yeah, I saw the dry spell.
Yeah, it's just what they what they are.
I mean, yeah, they have that game every year.
It's in their bag, unfortunately, to spend 4 or 5 minutes, sometimes longer, not scoring a field goal. And Tennessee wound up winning that game 76-73. It was a big test for Tennessee. People were questioning them because of their lack of a schedule. They hadn't played anyone up until they played the Cougs, and they got the win. So in that one, of course, Kingston Fleming, really good. Going to be likely a one and done. Look, I know it doesn't happen under Kelvin Sampson outside of Walker. This is going to happen. I mean, look at this guy.
For sure.
He pretty good size for point guard at 6'4". And can score the basketball. He is a perimeter player shooting not just 55% from three. Field goal percentage, 64% for a 6'4 guard. Yeah, enjoy the year with him. This, as long as everything health-wise is cool, we're talking about clear lottery pick. Thanks. At that. So it's part of playing in that or recruiting in that pool. We talk about how the recruiting's picked up. Of course, it comes with the winning. It comes with the NIL investment. When you get a kid like this and they continue to come through, I don't know if they'll ever, I don't think they'll ever be Calipari's Kentucky. It's just not how they want to build their program. But when you see a talent like this, you take him, and he's clearly the right fit. And then you go, hey, you want to see Kelvin Sampson on draft night. Giving him a hug, pat him on the back. That's how Calipari recruited as well. We're not just a program who wins now. We're a program who gives you top five picks and lottery picks. So why wouldn't you want to play here? I think Kingston Flemings is going to start a trend as long as the Cougs want to do it of having spectacular players here for a year. And he fits the bill. But let's hear from Kelvin Sampson, not just about Kingston Flemings, but one of the reasons they lost. By the way, the Cougs got Notre Dame today in the Players Era Festival, as that continues. Had a couple tough games. Here's another one. But let's hear from Kelvin Sampson on the loss to Tennessee.
I thought we did a good job guarding. Gillespie's an older, experienced played at the highest level his entire career. Is he a senior? Senior? He's really good. He scored 22 points, but he took 16 shots, but he made 9 free throws. The difference in the game is the free throws. He went 9 for 9. Kingston went 2 for 2. I'm not saying we weren't fouling. I'm not, but they were too. Both teams were playing aggressive, tough defense. Boom, 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 boom. Shouldn't be 29-11.
Now, some of those free throws came late because they're trying to stay in the game, playing a foul game. But, yeah, they did not have the same type of a parade to the free throw line as Tennessee, as he laid out for you. I get it. The free throws, not what you're looking for to give up when you're in the middle of a competitive game. But I'd ask, knock down a couple field goal attempts. That's all. That's all. When we look back at Cougs' losses over the last several years, it always feels like the same formula. They're never out of a game in the first half. It's always wins the – of course, it doesn't always happen. They win certainly a lot more than they lose. But when are they going to go through a stretch of time where nothing is falling and they're not getting to the free throw line to stem the tide? And I was trying to go through that half because the Cougs are up as I look at it. They went up 46-41 with on a JoJo Tugler layup with 15:46 to go. I'm just scrolling and I'm filling time so it doesn't feel as long as it's taking me to find the next time they score a point. What keeps going? They don't score another point until Milos Uzan. It's Milos or Milos?
Milos.
I always go back and forth. Milos Uzan knocks down a couple of free throws with 8:22 remaining.
7 minutes.
7 minutes without scoring a point. This is one of their longer stretches without scoring. Let's go. So we're talking about 7 minutes without scoring a point. When's the next time? It's even longer, of course, before they make a field goal. Okay. Uzan makes the jumper on their next possession, so he got going a little bit. But we're talking nearly 8 minutes between field goals made.
It's crazy.
And yet they were still in the game because of how great defensively they are. Because it wasn't like they were up by 10. They're only up by 5 when the drought started. But they are so good defensively that they can stay in games when they go through these long stretches. If only they could find an answer to that. We might be talking about, of course, the injuries played their part earlier, in earlier years. But certainly last year, we're talking about a national title. And who knows how many Final Four appearances they would have without injury. So some hard luck yesterday, but they'll be fine. They're 6-1. We'll see where they are as far as the polls are concerned, as if they matter that much. But the third game in three days today in the Players Era Tournament. You may be asking yourself, why are the Cougs playing in this tournament? Playing 3 games in 3 days. This isn't like a conference tournament where this happens. Normally, you play for the Cougs and what they do. They might play in a 4-team tournament. They'll play 2 if they win the semifinal or whatever it is. But for this one, they're playing 3 in 3 days. Even with the loss, they keep playing. Why? Why are they playing that? Well, because the Players Air Tournament or Festival, whatever you want to call it, is doling out the cash. This was the quote from Kelvin Sampson. They're giving us $1 million. That's why we're here. They decide to put a court down at some vacant lot, and they give us $1 million. I'd go play there, too. This is just for playing. You get prize money for winning. You get $1 million for winning the thing. But the Cougs, this is the quote he gave to ESPN, according to DraftKings. This is from one of their tweets. $1 million to show up and play. Yeah, I get it. That's a nice chunk for a nice appearance fee for the Cougs. And then, of course, if they had won the whole thing, you get yourself another $1 million. All right, we'll go to break with that. You want to join us? 713-780-3776. We'll talk some Rockets when we come back. They've got a game in San Francisco against the Warriors, the old rival, one more time. We'll talk about that when we come back.
You're listening to the Del Olalea Show
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Live from the Huntington Bank Studios, here's Del Olalea.
So it's an NBA Cup night. The Rockets go to Golden State. All it means visually is you'll have a new, or at least a different looking court in San Francisco tonight. I only bring it up because Luka was complaining about the court last night as the Lakers were playing the Clippers, and I need him to quiet down because we just got confirmation back in October that the NBA is going back to putting Larry O'Brien on the court in the finals, and also the script finals logo as opposed to that superimposed CGI YouTube TV finals thing that they did the last couple of years, really since, I guess, the bubble. I think they started doing that. So thankfully, it appears the reason why it was a slippery court wasn't because of different logos on the court. It was because of the Kings play at Crypto, and they had a game the night before, and just the condensation from the rink caused it, because I don't need a reversal of the decision to make the finals look like the finals again. Make it look like something we should care about. We're going to watch basketball fans because it's the finals, but make it look important on the court, and they made that decision to go back. So, Luka, quiet down. Draw your fouls, whine to referees, but stop talking about courts and slippage. All right? I don't need Adam Silver to reverse a decision, one of the few good ones he's made over the last couple of years. So Rockets in Golden State or in San Francisco to play the Warriors. Warriors haven't had a good year. They've been up and down. They started out great. The Jimmy, Draymond, Steph thing was going good. And then they hit a rough patch. People started talking, wondering if actually we started to speculate, who was Jimmy talking about? Who were those guys talking about? People thought they were talking about Kuminga. People thought the vets were talking about Pods. Pods famously now known for saying he wanted to have a better career than Steph, which is admirable, but keep it to yourself. No one wants to hear you say that about the legend in town. So they've had their issues. I'm not surprised. They're an older team with questionable bench depth. They always felt like a team to me that would be a play-in team over the course of 82 games. They had their great run because they were desperate to get out of the play-in and make the playoffs. Of course, we had to deal with them, and they actually did wind up playing in the play-in. But they were a team, before they traded for Jimmy Butler, that thought, hey, if we don't do something, we might not make the playoffs at all. They did. Unfortunately, they beat the Rockets, and of course, the Rockets have made several moves to make sure that doesn't happen. One of those moves won't be available tonight in Kevin Durant, but we'll see if the Warriors can meet the physical nature of the Rockets, because if you're a team who isn't looking to do that night, you really ain't got no shot, because every night the Rockets are going to make it tough on you to operate offensively, and even the way they play offense themselves is one where they're going to beat you up, whether it be Şengün in the post, and then you have Amen when they just want to spread the floor for him and let him go one-on-one. While the handle isn't the best, when he's not losing the ball and you can't build a wall around him, one Euro step and his explosiveness leads to a dunk. It's not even a play. They just say, get out of the way. And at this point with Amen, we're not at to the level where you have to wall him up and have all eyes on him and have multiple guys with feet in the paint like you do with Giannis. But as far as how effective he is, if you're just going to line up, particularly if it's just a perimeter player of similar size or smaller on him, you can just spread the floor, get to the cup in two steps, and he's dunking on you. So if the Warriors aren't ready to meet that challenge, but the Rockets will beat them pretty solidly. We'll see how, of course, the shooting variance and Steph and all that stuff goes. But interested to see the Rockets in their second game without KD, how they play. They were able to take care of the Suns pretty easily. That's a Suns team that is exceeding expectations, but they're not looked at as anyone to be worried about. And I'm not sure the Warriors are either, but the name itself will at least have people paying attention. And the Rockets, if you're interested about the NBA Cup, they need to win it. I don't know if it eliminates them, but I think they've already got one loss. So they can't drop this one if they still want to maybe make a trip to Vegas in December, I think, for the NBA Cup. All right, so we'll go to break with that. That's our one done. We'll get into the Texans because John Gruden is an insane person, and we have some sound from him. He's our favorite ex-coach on this show. We play sound from him quite a bit, and he's back at it again. Now, the gist of the clip is, well, we edited it. It's from Barstool. But the gist of the clip is him talking about football in the state of Texas. But his section about the Texans is pretty special, so we'll hear from him when we come back. Hour one done. We got one more hour to go. We'll be back.
Menards Black Friday sale is here. Get everything you need to bring home the holidays. A Nerf Blaster dog toy blasts tennis balls 75 feet. Fun for you and your pup. Just $15.99. Delicious Dubai chocolate is $12.99 a bag. Color-changing squish lamps and Performax drill bit sets are only $4.99 each. Menards has great Black Friday gifts for everyone in your family. Hurry in while supplies last. Good through November 30th. See Menards.com for details.
Warm season's greetings.